wouldn't seem significant to anyone else, but it's everything to me. He signed it with his full name, and under the signature are three words. Come to me. I'm on my break, but I don't care. Eating is now the last thing on my mind. The impatience, irritation, and rage that's been building beneath my skin all day like a geyser churns and churns with each step I take. I clutch the clipboard in my hand like a shield, and I haven't decided if I want to throw it at his head the moment I see him or not. The part of me that didn't scoff at his audacity to beckon me luxuriates in his attention. It's a low, mean facet of my personality I didn't even know I possessed. I glut myself on the knowledge that a man like Grayson, a powerful, dangerous man, wants me. I may be his only option, but it doesn't seem to register when all his attention is on me. Even though I know I'm walking a treacherous path, with fatal consequences at either end, I can't seem to make myself stop. The officers at the entrance to his cell block must have been bribed as well, because they turn a blind eye when I appear. Loud cranks and clangs of the door opening, which are followed by an accompanying shout, are the only sign they're aware of my presence at all. I linger just outside the gaping maw of the prison block, and the chilling realization that the next step I take will be a defining moment overwhelms me with indecisiveness. I take an unsure step forward, pulled by the inexplicable connection that spurred so many of my rash decisions. The dark parts of me find solace in the blackness inside him. Like finding like, and set ablaze. I approach the cell I know is his, unaware or even conscious of any inmates in the surrounding cells. I can hear them catcalling and banging on their doors, but it doesn't faze me. The bars on his cell are in desperate need of repainting. Flakes of gray slough off onto my palms as I grip the iron with both hands. "Why did you summon me here?" I say. "We had a deal." My words are saying no, but my voice is all wrong. Breathy. Like a little virgin who isn't quite sure she wants to go all the way, despite how good she knows it may feel. His abs contract as he lifts to a sitting position. Try as I might, I can't look away. Surely, I deserve a place in hell for the long seconds I spend staring at his bare abdomen. He doesn't notice or doesn't comment as he gets up from his bunk to cross to the bars. His posture is deceptively relaxed with one shoulder against the metal. I have a feeling all the things he doesn't say are only stored up for another time, but only because they don't serve him in this moment. His reaches through the enclosure, his expression contemplative as he twines a lock of my hair around his fingers, like a cat toying with his prey.
"I think the more important question, Mrs. Emerson, is why you came."
Words knot in my throat, and horror leeches all the blood from my face. "Because we crossed a line, and you need to know we can't do it again." He abandons my hair from my jaw, his finger tracing from the point of my chin to the curve of my ear. I start to step away, then realize his other hand wraps around my wrist. I couldn't move even if I wanted to. When had he taken hold of me?
"So you're saying you came to see me because you don't want to see me again?"
His voice is so smooth, so guileless and entrancing, I find myself leaning toward him, wanting to taste his words right from the source. When the fingers investigating my chin scrape up and over my lips, and I do taste him, the earthy flavor of his skin bursting over my tongue like an aphrodisiac, I shake my head to clear it. "Stop twisting my words." I try to yank my arm out of his grip, but to no avail. His hold is more effective than handcuffs. "Let me go." He cocks his head, like he knows how badly I want him to keep touching me.
"I don't think I will. We're not finished."
"Finished with what?" I'm horrified and ashamed to find the back and forth has gotten me wet. It's all fun and games until the realization dawns that I like this, not just the forbidden aspect or the danger, but the wrongness. There must be something wicked inside me. Those parts Vic broke pieced themselves back together, but the jagged edges don't quite fit anymore. Panic spurts through me, hot and vital, instinctual. He doesn't hold me hard enough to bruise, and somehow that only intensifies his draw. But he doesn't let me go, either.
Our conversation,
he says in a low voice.
Now answer the question.
Grayson, please. He sucks a deep breath through his teeth, and it causes the hair on my arms and the back of my neck to stand on end. He shifts closer, pressing his body against the bars between us. He's so close, I can feel the heat of him through the metal. If I moved even the slightest bit, we'd be chest to chest. The temptation makes me shiver. His groan causes the bars to vibrate, and my blood hums in response.
Say that again.
I tug at my arm, but his grip tightens, and he pulls me forward so that we're almost touching. I'm so far over the line that I don't even know if it was intentional or not. Stop, I say, without an ounce of conviction. With his forehead against the bars, he closes his eyes.
Say it, little mouse.
I will if you'll let me go.
Say my name.
I wish I weren't trembling. Showing him any vulnerability is only asking for him to exploit it.
Please.
He growls.
Say it.
Grayson.
Excellent, little mouse. Now tell me why you came. Tell me why you look like you're about to fly out of your skin.
Knowing that silence is my only safe option, I shake my head. His hold on my wrist gentles, and I can feel his breath on my jaw.
Tell me.
You were right.
Good girl.
He nearly groans it. The blatant sexuality in the sound is almost too much to bear.
How was I right?
I should be worried about the officers, about my job, about my sanity. But there is no room for anything but Grayson. I stood up to him.
To your husband?
He asks, though from the smug expression on his face, he knows who I'm talking about. I try and fail to stop the shivers that rack my body because of his proximity. Focusing with him near is futile. He tried to hurt me again. His sneer is as sharp and lethal as a blade to the throat.
I bet he did.
There is a beat of silence before he asks.
What did you do? Did you hurt him, little mouse?
The last word is soft, nearly purred in my ear. I tried to. My voice is barely even a croak, but my words light him up. I was making dinner, and he came at me. I didn't mean to cut him, but I was holding a knife, and he wouldn't stop.
Don't be ashamed,
he says when my gaze drops from his.
He's the one who should be ashamed. No man should put his hands on a woman.
I look pointedly at him and raise an eyebrow, even though his record never indicated anything of the sort.
I would never hurt you, little mouse. That's why you came to me.
I came because I'm an idiot. I try to put energy into my voice, but there is none left. What do you want from me? What game are you playing?
I'm playing a most dangerous game, and you're the prize. Our deal is off, Tessa. I want you, and I'll take you any way I can get you.
Breath strangles in my throat. I won't. I can't do that again.
Liar.
He croons as the fingers not wrapped around my wrist trace the fading bruise on my lip.
You're not upset because you didn't like it. You're angry because you loved it.
Protests stick in my throat, and I'm about to answer when the alarms sound. Someone must have reported us after all. My response is drowned out by shrill screams from the sirens. Time's up. I glance back at him, and his smile is slow and predatory. He's scented blood and is preparing for the kill.
Tell me,
He yells from his cage.
You come back and tell me, little mouse, if he doesn't look at you differently. If he doesn't have a gleam of respect in his eyes the next time he attempts to hurt you.
I won't do that. His grin gains a razor-sharp edge, eyes glinting with the red alarm lights as they flash. Officers finally burst through the doors and race down the hallway, but I can't hear the shouts over my panicked thoughts and thundering heartbeat. They rush by me to unlock the door to his cell, and he releases me, backing away with his hands held over his head in a supplicating gesture that we all know is only for show. Even though he's the one behind bars, somehow he still holds all the power. He keeps my gaze locked with his, and I take an automatic step in retreat. No matter how much distance I put between us, I can still feel his hands on me.
I'll talk to you tomorrow, little mouse. They cleared me for work detail.
10. Are you okay? Annie asks as she relieves me a few hours later. I'm all right, I say, and wince when my voice sounds as if I took a chainsaw to it. I clear my throat. It's just been one of those days. She nods her understanding, though, really, she has no idea. And for that, I'm grateful. If she knew precisely what I'd done, she'd be running just as fast as she could in the opposite direction. We're trained not to get close to inmates for exactly this reason. We lose our objectivity, and that can be dangerous, even deadly. One mistake, one misstep, and we could fuck up and cost someone their life, or lose our own. I berate myself for my stupidity and utter selfishness. It must have been insanity, I reason. Nothing else would explain why I let Grayson touch me, why I let him do so much more than touch me. No, I can't go there. Take care of yourself, Annie says to me as she winds a stethoscope around her neck. I say something appropriate back, or at least I hope I do. Annie seems to accept my response and starts checking over charts. God, I need to pull myself together. I push my fingers into my eyes until I see spots. Compared to my own life, Annie has it easy. She's about 25, maybe. I'm only 2 years older, but it feels like a lifetime of differences separate us. According to her, this is only a temporary job, and she plans to use the experience to get a job as a traveling nurse. She wants out of this city and to see the country. I've never been out of Michigan, and I don't foresee an end to my life at Blackthorn. At least, not while Vic has any say in the matter. He likes keeping me well and truly under his thumb. She's happily single, and I suffocate a little bit more each day I'm married to Vic. A sigh turns into a yawn as I make my way back to the lockers to retrieve my things. My self-pity is exhausting. I put myself into this mess. My marriage to Vic, my whatever with Grayson. Both are entirely my fault. I wave goodbye to the people at the front desk, but they pay no more attention to me than they did this morning. Sometimes I think I could walk into the prison with a gun like a stark-raving lunatic and no one would bat an eye. It's as if they've trained themselves not to look at me. It happens that way, I've learned. People don't want to see what scares them. They don't want to help you with your problems. They want you to stay the fuck out of their lives because the complication of your pain is too inconvenient. The icy wind tears through my hair as I push through the doors. I tug my jacket closer and lean forward, which only serves to let the cold slip down my neck. I let out a bark of laughter. I just can't win. Story of my life. The interior of my old car is no better, and it takes 3 tries for the beleaguered engine to turn over. While the inside warms, I huddle into my jacket and rest my head on the steering wheel. I shove my hands, already frozen blocks of ice, between my legs to try to get them to thaw. In the thick of a Michigan winter, it's mostly pointless, but the actions are comforting. I could use a little comfort. A lot of it. Tears pool in my eyes, but I blink them back, which makes my eyelids sting. All my life, it has felt as if I'd been looking for affection. Something that seems to come so easy to everyone else. My parents, if they could be called that, wouldn't know the meaning of the word. If they weren't screaming and slapping each other, they were screaming and slapping me. If they weren't doing that, they were pretending I didn't exist. I must have made the perfect target for Vic. I was no innocent. Not since Tommy Blankenship coerced me into the backseat of his Ford Taurus with all the charm and promises his high school senior quarterback reputation could muster. Of course, there hadn't been any affection there either. The role in the back seat had lasted all of 10 minutes. Not that Tommy gave a good goddamn about that. I couldn't fault him. His slight was born from ignorance and not maliciousness. Still, I should have learned after that, but of course I didn't. Following sweet fumbling Tommy was a string of boys, then men, who only seemed to feed the nothingness. After earning my bachelor's of science in nursing, I met Vic. And stupid me, I thought he was different. Boy, was I wrong. He didn't show me the face behind the mask at first. In fact, he was the most charming man I'd ever met. He lavished attention on me like I was the most fascinating woman he'd ever met. There were impromptu dates, which I later learned he couldn't afford. But by the time he proposed, I was well and truly under his spell. It made the day he first hit me all the more shocking. It didn't take long after that for me to learn what my new life entailed. I bark out a laugh that's as humanly possible for it to be as my hands finally warm up enough to grip the wheel with some semblance of control. Control. Now that's a joke. I haven't felt in control of my life. Ever. As I pull out of the parking lot, I shake my head in denial, but the thought whispers through the walls I've thrown up, as determined as the freezing wind in search of skin. You were certainly in control in Grayson's arms. And just like that, I'm not cold anymore. The desire that's been so hard won during 3 years of marriage seems so readily called to the surface where he's concerned. Wind batters against the car as I carefully navigate the slippery streets back to the house Vic and I share. The confrontation with Grayson today only underscores a fact I've been ignoring myself. I can't stay with Vic. I don't know how I'm going to manage to get away from him. Even thinking it to myself makes me want to tremble in fear, but I know I have to. What other alternative do I have, though? Let him kill me? I won't lie to myself and say I hadn't contemplated that. Just let him end it once and for all. Death would almost be a relief. There's a part of me that simply won't let myself give up. I almost hate myself for it, but despite the times he's tried to beat it out of me, he hasn't quite managed yet. I begin to plan as I make the long trek home. No doubt Vic will take retribution for me fighting back, but I will do what I do best. I will endure. But only for one more day. One more day. And then while he's at work late tomorrow, catching up on what he missed today, I'll make my move when I get off my shift. I'll run and hide as far and as long as it takes to be free of him. Grayson, what happened between us was a mistake. I shiver as I pull into the driveway and idle for a few more precious seconds of peace. Kissing him, letting him touch me and give me pleasure was a measure of control, of freedom, that I haven't had in a long time. It gave me the wake-up call I needed to break out from under Vic's control. I'll leave it at that before anything else happens. Intuition tells me he's just as dangerous as he appears, and I've had enough manipulative men for a lifetime. A light blinks on in the living room window. Vic is no doubt waiting for me inside, watching, seething, biding his time. Tonight's punishment will probably be worse than anything I've ever had to live through. But live through it I will, because tomorrow, I will be free of the prison of my own making. My gait is slow as I navigate the slippery sidewalk. A bone-deep wariness settles over me, making each step a small feat of its own. My show of defiance the night before had caught Vic off guard, but tonight he will be ready. He's had all day to think about the disturbing things he wants to do to me. I open the door with steady hands and find him sitting on the couch watching a football game, which makes me want to laugh all over again. The entire time we've been together, Vic has espoused the idea of watching sports. He prefers the news or documentaries. That's how I know he's only pretending for my benefit, trying to lull me into a false sense of security. I'm home, I say lightly, because two can play at this game. He grunts but doesn't look my way. As I walk by to put my purse and jacket in the coat closet, I don't miss how his hands clench reflexively on the arm of the sofa. I bet he imagines them around my throat. I go straight to the kitchen to begin fixing dinner. Around an hour later, once the sharp implements are out of the way, he makes his appearance in the doorway. "Dinner's ready," I say calmly and plate the steak, mashed potatoes, and organic green beans. Habit is the only thing that kept me from charring the meat and overcooking the beans. I shouldn't have bothered because Vic doesn't spare the food a second glance.
"You're late again,"
he says, his voice deceptively calm. There was a lockdown in one of the cell blocks. I try to keep my own response just as calm and matter-of-fact, so he won't hear the lie in my voice.
"Is that so?"
But it isn't a question. Tension rises and my mind goes to the steps I'll need to clean up dinner. First, I'll have to gather the dirty dishes and put away any leftovers. "Yeah, there was another fight today, I think. We were pretty swamped." I'll rinse the dishes in the sink and leave the worst of the lot to soak while I pre-wash and load the rest of the dishwasher. Once that's finished, I'll scrub the oven and countertops and the sink until they gleam.
"Uh-huh,"
is all he says. I nudge his plate in his direction and turn to make two tall glasses of tea. The moment I turn my back, I know he'll make his move. And I'm not wrong. I'm only sad he didn't begin in the living room, where I secreted a gun underneath a side table for the moment I gathered enough courage to leave him. His hand whips out, and his fingers tangle in the long line of my hair, yanking back and tearing strands right from the root. I cry out in surprise and pain as my body comes in contact with his.
"I don't know what the hell's gotten into you, but it's going to stop now."
I tilt my chin up in a silent invitation for him to do his worst. "You're right about that, Vic. I want a divorce." 11. Everything hurts. My arms, my legs, my head, even my hair throbs with each dull thud of my heart. There isn't a spot on my body that doesn't ache, but I pull myself out of bed anyway. It's only at the thought of leaving that keeps me moving. Like a lodestone, it calls to me. "Now take a shower," it says. "Wash your hair, do your face, and get dressed." They're all things that will convince Vic I haven't changed one bit. No doubt he still believes the thorough beating he gave me last night was enough to quell my small, ineffective rebellion. If anything, the aches and pains only serve to firm my resolve. He thinks he convinced me to stay. He couldn't be more wrong. Vic left by the time I enter the kitchen. I half-heartedly consider the fact that I'll never see him again. The thought is less concerning than I imagined it would be. Mostly, I just feel tired. How can someone my age feel so damn tired? I check my reflection in the rearview mirror as I wait for the car to heat up. At least he stayed away from my face this time. I can't say the same for the rest of my body. My arms are so black and blue that I wear a long-sleeved Henley underneath my scrubs to hide them. I learned my lesson. The last thing I need is for Grayson to see what he did to me. I don't know what he would do, and I have no interest in finding out. My goal today is to keep my head down, do what little work I have to do, get home to pack, and get the hell out. It takes an eternity for me to even get to the infirmary, since the cold makes my sore muscles ache even more. I feel like one big throbbing bruise by the time I get there. Luckily, the pathologically punctual Grayson hasn't arrived yet. As soon as I turn on the machines, an officer radios for me to meet them in the main hall. At the same time, shouts come from outside of medical.
"Get the fuck down!"
The officer is shouting.
"Nurse!"
Adrenaline spikes, allowing me to move with relative ease. When I see what's waiting for me in the hallway, however, I want to run right back to the infirmary and hide. Three officers have an inmate between them, but he's fighting like hell to get free. I recognize him from a few weeks ago. I'd stitched him up when I first met Grayson. It takes a few minutes for his name to come to mind. Salvatore. I sigh mentally. I'm already exhausted, and the day hasn't even really started. Damn it all to hell, of course I would have an emergency the one day when I need a reprieve. I watch, horrified and a little removed, as the officers finally manage to subdue Salvatore, as he laughs as if it's all a big game to him. Like he doesn't realize he's in prison, seemingly the lowest of the low. What must it be like to have that much certainty? I damn sure don't know. There isn't a single thing in my life at this moment that I'm certain of, aside from the fact that I'm in completely over my head. I've been like a piece of dandelion fluff floating on the wind, my only direction coming from the whim of the winds. I gulp in deep swallows of air, trying to regain my sense of detachment and calm, but it's useless when I realize I'll see Grayson soon. As though thoughts of him have summoned him from the bowels of the prison, Grayson appears at my side. And despite the way my life feels like it's unraveling around me, his mere presence soothes my nerves somewhat. He and the prisoner lock eyes, and a silent conversation passes between them. Salvatore growls, and energy snaps around Grayson like a live wire. Do they know each other aside from the first meeting when I stitched Salvatore up?
Follow us to the infirmary.
One of the officers bites out before Salvatore throws his weight again, trying to free himself from the officer's hold. He has bandages, some bright red with fresh blood. Was he the one Grayson got into it with?
Damn it, you big bastard, calm the fuck down!
Grateful for the distraction, I follow the team of officers as they wrestle Salvatore through medical and onto a gurney. My fingers shake as I push them through my hair. When had my life spiraled so spectacularly out of control? Salvatore calms down by the time we reach the infirmary. He allows the officers to muscle him over to a hospital bed, where he sits as though it's his throne. Grayson follows silently behind me, and I gesture for him to get my kit from the storage closet as I snap on gloves.
You all right here?
One of the officers asks, as the others shackle the inmate to the bed. When he sees Grayson coming back from the cabinet, he starts shouting. The doctor, who oversees both medical and the infirmary, and the nurses, blows in as he often does when he remembers to do his job. With cold precision, he swipes a wipe over Salvatore's shoulder and then presses the needle into his skin. Salvatore tries to fight the sedative, but he's no match for its potency and succumbs within a few minutes. The doctor gives me instructions to check on his previous wounds, bandage the new ones, and monitor him for any change until he can be dismissed. The officer waits in the doorway until I look up from checking the bandages. Yes, I have it handled. You can go. I tell him.
You sure?
The officer asks, his eyes going to Grayson's intimidating form at the bedside. I roll my eyes as I strip off an old bandage to replace it with a fresh one. I'm sure. Let me do my job. When we're alone again, I turn to Grayson and meet his gaze over the unconscious inmate, the words bubbling free of their own accord. What do you want from me? I ask. Since we've met, you've turned my life upside down. I want to know why. What's your end game here? His body goes preternaturally still. How does he do that? How is he in such phenomenal control when it feels like I'm falling apart?
Tessa,
he says, his voice a low rumble.
I think we both know why.
I busy myself with cleaning the blood from Salvatore's brow so I don't have to answer his question. Then I say, help me turn him so I can change these bandages. I don't want to ask why he won't just leave me alone. I don't want to get involved. The questions are burning me up, but I bite my tongue to keep them from demanding an actual answer out of him. As I clean and bind Salvatore's wound, I repeat over and over in my head that it isn't my business. Do my job, get out. Do my job, get out. Once I've patched Salvatore up, I'll keep my head down and finish out my shift. Then I'll be free. Can you throw these away for me? I say absently, and thrust a handful of soiled bandages in Grayson's general direction. My mind is so thoroughly focused on the task, I don't realize that he hasn't moved to do what I ask right away. When I look up, ready to reprimand him for not doing his job, I freeze. At first, I don't understand what I'm seeing. It's as though the connection between my eyes and my brain is experiencing a disconnect. Grayson, who had to move to the other side of the bed to help me flip Salvatore, is holding a pair of medical scissors in his right hand. The blunt tip is pressed into Salvatore's neck, and a bead of blood forms, spilling down the side of his throat and into the shadows toward his back. What seems like hours pass, and the weight pulling on my neck and shoulders lifts, allowing me to meet Grayson's eyes. I'd seen them closed down before, like the day I first met him in this very room. But this expression is worse. My first instinct is to run, to get as far away from danger as fast as possible, but I can't leave my patient. Part of me, the part that submitted to his touch, can't leave him either. Not without understanding. What are you doing? My breath is harsh and my head is roaring. Get your hands off him. Those same hands that brought me such pleasure are steady as a surgeon's and prepared to kill. I can't let him do it. I wait for him to say something, make demands, beg, but he does nothing except stare at me with an unreadable gaze. His body telegraphs his intent before he ever moves a muscle, but I'm not fast enough to stop him from plunging the scissors into Salvatore's neck in one efficient, deadly strike. 12. A screech tears free, and I lunge forward to staunch the bleeding, but there's too much, and it's coming too fast. Asleep as he is, Salvatore doesn't so much as twitch as Grayson rips the scissors away and his life slowly slips through my fingers. Seconds tick by before Salvatore jerks once and then goes still again. Significantly still. With dark red smears of blood covering my hands and seeping into my scrubs, I stumble backward. All I know is that I need to get away, away from what just happened. Away from Vic, this place, Grayson, just away. I spin, intending to do just that, when Grayson comes up behind me and braces me against his chest.
Not so fast,
he says into my ear, and I shiver against him, feeling both too cold and too hot at the same time.
We're not done yet.
Please don't kill me, I say. I guess Vic hasn't beaten all the begging out of me after all. Please, just let me go. I won't say anything.
Oh, I know you won't.
His hands cinch down around my arms.
You're gonna stay real quiet-like while I take care of our man here. If anyone comes in, you tell them you've got it handled, just like you did before. Can you do that, little mouse?
My insides turn colder than the ass crack of a Michigan winter morning. You bastard! I seethe.
Oh, now don't be so upset. Just do as I ask and no one else will get hurt.
If I had something in my hands, I would have thrown it at his carefully blank face. My thirst for revenge quiets when I hear the squeak of sneakers against the tile floors and all the blood drains from my face. Someone's coming. I shove my feelings aside and try to figure out how the hell I'm going to get out of this mess.
Hey, Tessa, are you okay?
Annie's voice calls from down the hallway. My shoulders are tight and I blink rapidly as my mind races for an exit strategy. As if he can sense the direction of my thoughts, Grayson's arms tighten.
Don't do anything stupid,
he says.
Get me out of here and I won't have to hurt anyone else.
Out of here? I say around a gasp.
Blackthorn. Get me out of Blackthorn and I won't hurt her. Get me out without tipping off the guards or getting us caught, and I won't tell your husband what you did with me. How you wanted to scream for me.
fuck you. I try to buck away from him, but his arms band tighter around me. The sound of footsteps is just outside the door when he says,
"Make up your mind, little mouse, or this all ends here."
If I do this, you won't hurt her. I don't trust him, but I can't take the chance he'll kill anyone else, especially someone like Annie, who doesn't deserve it.
I won't. But you'll need to get rid of her before she suspects anything, or I'll have to take care of it.
I don't want to know what take care of it means. So I shove out of his arms, and this time, he lets me go. Before Annie can round the corner and enter the room, I throw another blanket over Salvatore's still body and hope it will cover most of the blood on his body. There is nothing I can do about the floor, so I can only hope she doesn't look down. There also isn't anything I can do for the blood on my scrubs, but I wipe off most of it from my hands with a towel and toss it behind the bed just as her concerned face comes into view. "Hey!" she's already saying in a rush. "I heard you scream and wanted to make sure you were okay." Her voice trails off as she takes in my bloody scrubs and Grayson towering just a few feet away.
"Tessa?"
"I know. I'm a mess, right?" I try to laugh, but it sounds more like I'm choking. "They just brought this guy in with a hell of a knife wound." I jerk my finger over my shoulder at the prone Salvatore. "Bled like a son of a bitch."
"I'll say,"
Annie says slowly, as though she can't quite get a handle on the weird feeling in the room or why I'm acting so crazy.
"Are you sure everything is okay?"
"Absolutely. Just a hell of a mess to clean up." When she doesn't leave after another pause, I add, "Thanks for checking, though. I'm sorry if I scared you. I didn't know you were working this morning, too." She pauses, her eyes flitting back and forth between Grayson and me.
"I had to work a double,"
she says, and I note the dark smudges under her eyes.
"You sure you're all good here?"
"All good." I glance over my shoulder at Grayson's unreadable expression. "He was just about to help me clean up," I say, as though he didn't just kill a man with a pair of scissors and then threaten to kill her and possibly me too. She must read something in my eyes, some emotion I can't control, because she makes a move to run, to call out for help. Before I can warn her to stop, before I can even turn in Grayson's direction, he's across the room with his hands wrapped around a stunned Annie's throat. His arms flex and tears leak from her eyes as she struggles for breath. The fact that I let this man touch me brings bile to the back of my throat. I manage to look up into Grayson's eyes, startled to realize the same eyes that I'd found so alluring now seem as dead and as hard as the ice slicking the gravel outside. His nod is a little more than a jerk of his head.
"Get me out of here, and I'll let sweet little Miss Annie run along home."
"Fine!" I almost shout. I would do just about anything if it meant him getting his damn hands off her. Grayson releases Annie and murmurs to her words that I can't hear, but I can guess. Her face pales, and I send her a pleading look, hoping she knows that he really will kill both of us if she doesn't do what he says. If I make it through today, I may just kill Grayson for this. The only thing that keeps me from going crazy is imagining all the different ways I could do it.
"Don't do anything stupid,"
the devil himself warns as another set of footsteps draws closer to the room. Surprisingly, Annie manages to compose herself just as the footsteps come to a stop. Whatever Grayson said to her must have been effective, because the only evidence of her distress is the redness circling her eyes and suffusing her cheeks. I hope my control is as absolute as Grayson takes a seat on one of the hospital beds.
"How's everyone doing here?"
the officer asks, finally peeking his head in. If he notices anything off about the three of us, he doesn't say anything. His eyes merely skitter across the room without actually seeing anything, before he nods to the bed Salvatore is in.
"Doc give the all clear for him to get out of here."
In the end, I don't even have to think twice about what I'm going to do. The action feels as natural as breathing. I guess I've gotten better at lying than I thought. "I'll need to keep him for observation," Those guys really did a number on him. He might have a concussion. I'm pleased to find that fear doesn't cause me to stutter. I sound as bored and impatient as he did. The officer shifts, visibly uncomfortable, either from the mention of the sound beating they gave him or the fact that he'll have to take shit for not bringing the prisoner back.
Sergeant didn't say anything about observation. He's supposed to go back to the cell when you're through with him.
I have to rally all of the resolve I didn't know I had when I say, "Do you want to be responsible if he sustains further injury because you were too impatient? Let me do my job. You do yours." Then I wait, because I've learned it makes people more uncomfortable when there's a tense silence, and they will do just about anything to avoid it.
"You're the boss,"
he says, shifting a hand through his hair and taking a step back toward the door.
"No skin off my teeth. He's all yours."
He pauses, perhaps finally sensing the tension rolling off Annie and me in waves.
"Are you sure everything is okay here? If you want, I can have another officer come."
"No, there's no need. We're okay," I say shortly. My tone is sharper than I intend because he doesn't know how on the mark he is. The officer, no doubt irritated by my interruption and tone, lifts his hands.
"Whatever you say,"
he says, and backs away. Hard in my throat, I turn to Annie to offer an explanation or plead my case, but she backs away. Her movements so quick and instinctual that she nearly trips over her own feet.
"Don't,"
she squeaks out.
"Just don't."
Grayson observes from his spot on the other side of the room, his expression unreadable. The attraction that has been ever present since we met has turned to flat-out rage, but I manage to channel it into determination. I have to make this work. For Annie.
"You'll need to stay out of the way until it's time,"
I tell him. "We'll have to wait for shift change, and you've already caused enough fucking trouble today."
"Yes, ma'am,"
he says, and the amusement is plain in his tone. I grit my teeth and imagine gutting him with a scalpel. Annie takes a seat behind the computer, leaving me to face the rush of afternoon patients. A mix of regulars who come to have their meds administered and a handful of inmates in for annual exams. The work keeps my hands busy, but my mind is on Grayson, who sits quietly in the corner. When the nurse in charge of medical stops by to inquire about Annie's presence, I beg her off, saying I'm swamped and desperately need Annie's help. Under her condemning eye, I clean up the murder scene with unsteady hands, silent tears streaming down my face. There's blood all over the ground again, and I can't help but compare it to the night I had to clean up my own after one of Vic's beatings. I gag on my disgust and throw the bloody towels into the appropriate receptacle. I allow Grayson to get up long enough to help me change the sheets on Salvatore's bed. When I'm done, it looks as though he's just resting peacefully, which only makes me cry harder. By the end of the day, my nerves are shot, and I can't stop from shaking. The poor man whose medicine I'm trying to administer withstands several long minutes while I fumble with bottles until I get my hands on the correct one. I mumble a distracted apology as the patient shoots me an irritated glare. Even though I've desperately tried to ignore Grayson, I find myself looking up while I'm in the middle of treating patients. Each time, he's watching me, waiting. In response, I bare my teeth, which only causes him to smile. He obviously has me right where he wants me. There's no need for him to continue the little charade. It makes me want to claw his eyes out. When Grayson lifts into a sitting position and pins me with a level stare, I know it's time. With a nod, I glance at the door and find the officer has abandoned his post for the evening shift change. The very thought of how precisely Grayson orchestrated this entire situation makes my whole body go cold. If he can do this, what else is he capable of? Murder may seem like the worst act on the spectrum, but after years of torture from the one man I was supposed to trust, I know there are worse things than a quick death. Annie still hasn't said a word to me, and she hasn't moved from her spot behind the desk. When Grayson gets to his feet and heads in her direction, she shrinks back against the chair, which emits a terrible squeak. Grayson, don't... But before I've finished my plea, he strikes out with a swift grace I'm always surprised to see from his bulky form. His fist collides with Annie's cheek, her eyes roll into the back of her head, and she slumps indelicately in the chair. He ignores my cry of protest and carefully arranges her body at the computer. When he's done, her back is to the door. Anyone looking in would think she's working. During shift change, no one comes to the infirmary, and most inmates are busy going to and from the mess hall for dinner. Salvatore is expected to sleep throughout the night for observation, and no one but me will know he isn't sleeping. My stomach sinks when I realize this is actually happening. I'm about to wreck my life for this man. All the prisoners who saw us together, the guards he bribed, everyone will see me walk him out of prison. And I can only imagine the news reports, the trial. Oh my God, Vic is going to be furious.
Time to play, little mouse.
13. What is it exactly that you want me to do? I ask. My tongue darts out to wet my dry lips. My throat is so scratchy it causes my eyes to water. Panic will do that to you, I guess.
I want you to place a call for a medical emergency.
My mind races, connecting dots that I'd been too distracted or too blinded to notice in the first place. That's why Grayson targeted me the day we met. Why he hadn't left me alone since. Why he wormed his way under my shell when I was at my most vulnerable. You. I grind my teeth to stem the flow of words. This is your end game. You didn't pursue me because you were concerned about what my husband was doing to me. You don't give a shit about that. He draws close, but I don't back away. His eyes flit over my hard expression.
You can punish me for it later,
he says.
Make the call.
Grayson prowls back to the bank of computers where Annie slumps somewhat drunkenly over the keyboard. He places a hand on her head and absently strokes her hair. Threat signed, sealed, and delivered. My hands don't tremble as I reach for the receiver and punch in the number to the control room. The line rings for a few long seconds, and then a familiar voice answers.
Control room, Sergeant Bennett speaking. How may I help you?
Sergeant Bennett, this is Nurse Emerson from Medical. I have a patient here in need of an ambulance for transport to the hospital.
Inmate's number and medical information?
Number 8942589. The inmate is presenting with symptoms of appendicitis. He needs to be transported immediately for further evaluation. I try to interject enough impatience in my tone to make it seem like I'm just doing my job.
Prepare inmate for transport.
Thank you, I say. I turn to find Grayson standing behind me. Get on the gurney, I snap. You're supposed to be sick.
I like it when you're feisty,
he says with a smile as he hops onto the gurney and reclines. I like it when you keep your mouth shut. He groans as if in pleasure.
You're only making this better for me, little mouse.
I strap him down and pat my pockets to make sure my car keys are still there. I won't have a lot of time between them loading him into the ambulance and making my escape. The next person through those doors will find Annie, who probably won't hesitate to tell them exactly what happened. Then the police will be hot on my tail. I just have to be gone before that happens. I don't know where I'll go, but it will have to be somewhere far enough away that Vic, the cops, and Grayson can't find me. Like a deserted island in the middle of the ocean.
What are you thinking about so hard?
Grayson asks as I begin to wheel him down the hallway. A vacation? I retort. Now shut up. You're supposed to be incapacitated and in excruciating pain.
Keep talking to me like that?
He croons.
And a part of me will be in pain.
Your head? Because I may accidentally dump your ass on the concrete. Keep your mouth shut until we get to the ambulance. Before he has a chance to reply, the officer summoned by the industrious Sergeant Bennett arrives to escort us to the ambulance at the gate. My chance to turn back comes and goes, and I can only follow the officer as he moves at a clipped pace. I have to take 2 steps to his 1 as we speed through the prison and toward the west gate where the ambulance will be waiting. From there, everything speeds up. So much so that I can almost pretend it's happening through the filter of a dream. If it weren't for that filter, the gravity of the situation would have been too big. So big, the weight of it could crush me. When a rush of panic threatens to suffocate me, I feel someone's hand brush my own and find Grayson watching me. I immediately pull mine away and suck in a strangled breath. You can do this, Tessa. We burst out into the bracing cold, and I curse under my breath at the slap of frigid air against my bare skin. Without my coat, it's like jumping in the Atlantic, Titanic style. Except there's no hero to talk me off the edge. In my case, it's the villain forcing me into taking that first plunging step. The ambulance is already waiting by the gate with another officer in a van, which is idling by the control tower. A part of me had been hoping something would go wrong. Someone would discover Annie or Salvatore, call Grayson on his fake performance, or question me about his illness. But none of those things happen. The officer escorting us guides the gurney to the back of the ambulance, and I cling to it, if only to have an anchor in the maelstrom of my uncertainty. A paramedic emerges from the back of the ambulance, and he and the officer transfer Grayson to another stretcher and load him without any fuss at all. A sick, oily feeling begins to roll in my stomach, and it's only my clenched jaw that keeps me from being sick at their feet. In seconds, the officer is jumping in the ambulance behind Grayson's prone form as the paramedic slams the door closed. I reel back on my heels, stumbling on the slick pavement and reaching blindly for the door handle to keep myself upright. The ambulance guns for the gate and pauses while it opens. My heart leaps, thudding erratically as I wait for someone to sound the alarm. But they don't. In fact, the ambulance glides through the open gate and the van follows behind without any fanfare. It turns out when your life falls to pieces right before your eyes, it isn't with a bang. It's with a whisper. The entire way back through the prison to the control room, I'm certain someone will stop me and demand to know where Grayson is. I jump at every sound and stop breathing each time I hear footsteps or voices coming toward me. But they just pass by without a glance. It should be reassuring, but it has the opposite effect, ramping up my anxiety until I feel like I'm going to snap in half from the tension. I make it back to the locker rooms and retrieve my things. As I close the door, I realize it's probably the last time I'll ever be back. So I open it back up, clean out all of my belongings, and throw away what little trash is inside. My bag is a bit heavier than normal, and my steps are hesitant and dragging as I make my way to the control room, where chaos reigns. 2 officers are on duty, and they're both so busy it takes a few minutes for them to even see me waiting on the other side of the thick glass. One raises an eyebrow at me, and I put my keys through the slot and sign out. It isn't the end of my shift, and Annie is the only nurse on duty, but they don't comment, and I don't dare draw any attention to the fact.
See you tomorrow,
are the first words I wring from the officer. I make an appropriate reply, but my voice cuts out. I can't force any enthusiasm into the words. I won't be back. Either I'll escape this place, or I'll be in jail myself. The shock hits me on the drive home, and then numbness floods through me, and I'm grateful for it. It blots out all the doubts, the fears, the hopes. I feel everything through a pleasant layer of warm, fuzzy cotton, and only manage to pull into the drive safely because I've driven it so many times it's practically muscle memory. Moving on autopilot, I park and head straight for the bedroom to pack. There's no reason for me to delay leaving. Plus, I don't want to risk being here when Vic, or the cops, show up. Bras and panties, t-shirts, jeans all get tossed in the bag indiscriminately. I won't need anything fancy. Especially not the trashy lingerie Vic insisted I wear. That stays in the drawer. I give a passing thought to burning it, but it wouldn't be worth the effort. I grab my things from the bathroom and look around the room I've lived in for the past 3 years. There aren't any mementos from my childhood. No photo albums or baby blankets. I threw everything from my wedding day away after the honeymoon and didn't bother scrapbooking after it either. There isn't anything besides clothes that I care to take with me. Maybe it's a good thing, a fresh start. I shoulder the bag and head for the front door, plotting my route as I go. Maybe I'll head for Mexico, somewhere with the sun to burn away all the dreariness. I wouldn't have even seen the drawing if it wasn't taped to the door right in front of my face. There's only one person who could have put it there. I don't realize I'm saying, "No, no, 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 no," until my voice chokes with tears. It's a drawing of me the day I visited his cell. I'm clinging to the bars and looking a bit wild, my eyes bright and my hands gripping the metal like it's a lover. Certain I'm imagining it, like a waking night terror except in the middle of the day, I don't believe Grayson's standing in the doorway until he says my name. 14.
What are you doing here?
I ask, glancing around wildly, as if I'll be able to pull the answers from the ether. It makes no difference. I know why he's here. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't expecting to see him again. As he pushes his way inside and closes the door behind him, I realize he's changed clothes. He isn't wearing the standard-issue prison uniform anymore. I squint as he comes into the light, trying to make out what he's wearing. Then it dawns. The pants are so familiar because I see them at work every day. They're from an officer's uniform. It doesn't take a genius to figure out he must have overpowered the one in the back of the ambulance and escaped somehow. I swallow around the lump in my throat and ask the question that has knots forming in the pit of my stomach. Did you kill them? He raises a brow. After a pause, he says,
"No, I didn't kill them."
If I didn't know any better, I'd say his voice sounded almost tired, but that can't be possible. The energy coming off him in waves has my pulse responding in kind. Adrenaline kicks up and ignites in my blood. As he advances, I take matching, shuffling steps backward. With one eye on him, I look for a weapon, nearly seething. I am sick and damn tired of being hunted in this house, of being terrorized and bullied by men like him. Instead of backing away, I charge in his direction. He isn't expecting my sudden movement, and this time my shove catches him off guard and knocks him into the wall. Pictures dislodge and rain down, crashing to the floor in a spectacular shower of broken glass. His hands come up to block as I attack with my fists, unleashing a whirlwind of pent-up frustration on any part of him I can reach. My fury knows no bounds, and I slap, punch, and scratch every available inch of his skin. Unrecognizable sounds tear from my throat, and soon I'm panting from exertion. My nails rake down his cheek and score along his throat, breaking the skin. He curses and takes both of my wrists easily into one hand and pins me against the sofa with his hips.
"Why are you even here?"
I scream at him.
"I did what you wanted. I got you out. You win."
His body goes still, and he presses as close to me as he can. My heart leaps into my throat, and my pulse trips over itself.
"What if I want you?"
he asks quietly. My lips part, and for once, I don't have a retort. That is the last thing I ever expected for him to say. When I manage to speak, it's more like a croak.
"You're certifiable," I say, and try to squirm away from him. "After all the shit you pulled, you come back for what? A booty call? Screw you."
He ignores me and says,
"Come with me."
My brain simply short circuits.
"What?"
The grip on my wrist loosens.
"Come with me, now. Let's leave together."
"You can't be serious," I exclaim. "You just killed a man. I'm not going anywhere with you."
dead serious,
he replies.
You can't stay here, so leave with me. I can keep you safe.
Keep me safe? You're on the run from the cops. I just helped you escape prison. A laugh escapes me then, and I double over with it, my head going to his chest as the emotions bubble over. I guess that means I'll be on the run from the cops, too. He tips his chin up.
So run with me.
I don't get the chance to answer his question, because Vic chooses that moment to walk in the front door. My heart drops to my feet, and my body turns to stone. Grayson doesn't hesitate to shove me behind himself, guarding me against Vic. This can't be happening. Vic's eyes find us in the living room. He lets out a puff of breath, and his eyes go wide. The expression would be almost comical if the situation wasn't so dire. His cheeks color with rage, and a vein at the corner of his temple begins to throb as he takes a step forward and runs right into Grayson's fist. If I thought he was capable of violence before, it's nothing compared to the beating he unleashes on Vic. The sound of fists meeting flesh reminds me of all the times Vic did just the same thing to me. A voice inside my head tells me I should intervene. I should tell Grayson to stop, that we can just leave, anything to get him to quit. But I can't make myself say the words. I derive a sick, twisted satisfaction from each pained sound, each connected hit. It's the vindication I didn't know I was looking for. Vic's face is covered in blood, and his eye is already swelling, but Grayson keeps going.
Fucking piece of shit,
he says, grunting with the effort it takes to heave a bobbing Vic back to his feet.
How does it feel, motherfucker? Fuck you,
Vic says, spitting blood and earning another punch. The resultant crunch causes him to squeal, and his head lolls back, blood spurting from his nose. Grayson prepares to levy another hit when Vic lunges to the side and grabs a lamp from the side table. It isn't a cheap one either, so when it crashes into the side of Grayson's head, I call out, "No!" as he crumples to the ground by the coffee table. I scramble to his side, feeling for a pulse, and am swamped with relief when it flutters against my fingers. I don't have time to properly examine him before Vic stumbles to my side and pulls me to my feet with a fist wrapped in my hair. Instinctively, I pivot, gun in hand.